translation. Meanwhile, because Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for her daughter, Ruchika's wife, must be better, she asked her daughter for that oblation. Satyavati therefore gave her own oblation to her mother and ate her mother's oblation herself. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A husband naturally has some affection for his wife. Therefore, Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for Satyavati by the sage Ruchika must have been better than her own oblation. In Ruchika's absence, the mother took the better oblation from Satyavati and ate it. Omagyatminandasya jananjana stalakaya chaksura militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa gadamayam dadati svabhadantikam vancha kalpatubhyascha kripa sindhu bhavacha Patitananam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita So, the word oblation has been translated as an offering to God, or, at least this is in the dictionary, an offering to God or to a deity. That's the meaning of oblation. And Srila Prabhupada also similarly asked us that before conceiving a child, we should do our own little oblations. And he suggested to us that we both the spouse, yeah, both the husband and wife should chant 50 rounds each before conceiving a child. And this is our little offering to Krishna, to the deities. Of course, one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, but how is it possible to have union with your spouse after chanting 50 rounds? And Prabhupada replied, yes, that is the point. That ultimately we have to become transcendental to all these things of this world, be transcendentally situated and go back home, back to Godhead. It is an also interesting phenomena which Shivaram Maharaj does down in what is the place called? New Vrajadham. That he offers the child, once it is born, he offers the child to the deity. He personally takes the child and places it at the lotus feet of the deity. So this is another oblation. Yeah. You know, once the child's born, you make an offering My dear Lord, this is your child. Please make him a great devotee. So in this way, Prabhupada introduced, you know, these, perhaps we cannot do the same as previously, whereas these different munis, they had the ability to chant Vedic mantras and produce Brahmins and Kshatriyas consecutively in this verse is mentioned. But at least by us endeavoring to chant 50 rounds before conception, then a special child would be produced within the family. And we can see that, practically speaking, that within our society, our children are very, very special. Sometimes I'm working with our children, not so much here in this country, but whenever I'm traveling, I tend to notice that a lot of the times the children are neglected, where the devotees are attending seminars and classes, and the children, they're out basically defending for themselves, doing whatever they can without being supervised. And this is a little bit of a crying shame, because actually we should take more interest in our children, because they're not ordinary personalities. In fact, I think Prabhupada once said that the demigods themselves are lining up to join the Hare Krishna movement. You know, you can imagine they're up there with all their responsibilities given to them by Krishna, and they look down on us, the Hare Krishna devotees, chanting, dancing, and feasting, and attaining the supreme perfection of life and going back home, back to Godhead. You can well understand they must get somewhat envious of us. So, but Prabhupada did say that they get so fired up with what's going on down here that they're lining up. They probably have to get some substitute, someone to take care of their particular service. But once that's done, who knows who's joining the Hare Krishna movement nowadays. And Prabhupada also said one time that our children's children would be pure devotees. He also said that. Which means that as the generations go on within Krishna consciousness, our children will become that much purer. And coming from, special corners of the universe. So therefore, although we're speaking here of the lineage of the history of long gone days, we also have our own lineage within ISKCON. Here in England, you have your lineage of descendants of Dhananjaya Prabhu, descendants of Kripamoya Prabhu, descendants of Shruti Dharma Prabhu, and descendants of Krishna Dharma Prabhu. There are so many wonderful devotees who have conceived children within Krishna consciousness, and we have no doubt, observing their activities today, that they're not ordinary children, and they've been brought up within Krishna consciousness and excelled in Krishna consciousness in many different ways. Some years ago, I told my son, I said, "Well, you're so lucky." I said, "You're so lucky you've been brought up within Krishna consciousness." I said, in my first 20 years in Krishna consciousness, I had to try to forget what I had learned within the first 20 years. Yeah? At least 10 years, or I think Prabhupada said 12 years. He told Shruti Kirti that once, that the first 12 years of Krishna consciousness, whatever you say and do, will not have very much potency or meaning, because there's very little faith. And the first 12 years you're trying to forget what you had learned previously. There was a Mridanga teacher who was advertising classes. You know this story? He's advertising classes, and one person came and said, "Oh, I'd like to learn from you, Mridanga." And the teacher said, "Well, how long have you been playing Mridanga?" And he replied, "Well, I've been playing for at least 5 years." So he said, "Well, I'll charge you 20 rupees. And then another person came, "Well, how long have you been playing?" "Well, I have never even picked up a drum." So he said, "Well, I'll charge you only 10 rupees. And then the other one complained, "Well, I've been already playing 5 years. What is this? You're charging me extra. You're charging me that much more?" And then the teacher replied, "Yes, I'm charging you extra because it's extra time I will spend on you trying to get you to forget what you have already learned." So this is our situation. Again, I speak for myself, that it really, really took a long time for me to wind down from the conditioning that I had received as a non-devotee. I think it was even after 15 years, I was in one taxi one day. I was in the back of the taxi chanting my japa, and the taxi man had his radio on. I can't remember exactly the song, but I think it was one of the Beatles songs. "She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah." Something like that. And I found myself tapping my foot. And I thought, wow, you know, this is amazing. The impression is still so strongly there. So although I was chanting from up here, down there, I was still conditioned. Yes. I remember also, I had given up everything when I became a devotee, except for one tape that I kept in my top pocket. Well, I kept it actually in the locker so no one would see it. Whenever I had a tough day within Krishna consciousness, I would take my secret tape and secretly listen to the music. You want to know what it was? No, it was an Hendrix. Oh, actually, I forgot. what is it again? You don't need no education. They were my favorite group, and although they had some very good lyrics, revolutionary, I would say, in most cases. But yeah, you don't need no education, you don't need no false control. Yeah, well, we do need education, you know, the proper education, and we do need the control of the spiritual master. So Krishna consciousness is definitely one up from the Pink Floyd, which I realized after some time, and then I dramatically one day threw the tape in the bin and said goodbye. So we have a new lineage within Krishna consciousness, and we should be very proud that we're starting a new revolution in consciousness to change the world. In fact, this was one of the statements, one of the purposes of ISKCON that Prabhupada wanted to achieve, to systematically propound spiritual knowledge to society at large, to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace within the world. So therefore, naturally, that requires some discretion on our part to do the right thing. Discretion has been also discretion means recognizing and avoiding words, actions, and attitudes that could bring undesirable consequences. So, as I was saying yesterday, we, in the early days, we tried our best to avoid these undesirable consequences. But often it wasn't possible to come up to the standard, so it took some time. I remember when the first demon that I met in the early days, I'll never forget this particular experience, because he was really, really, really an obnoxious demon. And he would harass us as we were going down Oxford Street. We would go down Oxford Street four times a day, up and down. Twice in the morning, and when we took lunch, and then twice in the afternoon, and we would come back for the evening program. So there was this one fruit vendor who had a mobile fruit stand, which he would place on the street, in Oxford Street. And he really, really, really didn't like the holy name. And he demonstrated that in a way which was not very funny for us, because he threw his rotten tomatoes and fruits as we passed. And we were told in those days to tolerate any inconvenience. Just accept that this is well, in those days we would say, your karma, Prabhu. Not Krishna's mercy, Prabhu, but your karma. And so this went on for months, many months. And one day he snapped. He could not tolerate the holy name any longer. So he waited for the devotees to pass the Harinam. And then he grabbed the last devotee and he started beating him like anything. And this devotee had enough sense to call out to us, Haribo! Haribo! And we all turned around and noticed the situation at hand. There was no discussion. Every single devotee pounced on this demon. And that was, except for me, because I was an ex-hippie and I believed in love and peace. But I watched from a distance, and it was absolutely amazing. We have one godbrother, he's already passed away, but his name was Padmalochan Prabhu. he got his cartels and he was whacking this guy on the head with his cartels. I saw the cartels swinging in the air and hitting this guy. And by the time the devotees had finished with him, the guy was just flaked out on the street, his head spinning around, wondering what happened to him. The devotees just got up and carried on the Harinam and went back to the temple. So the next day we informed the temple president that actually we weren't going to go out that morning because of the incident the day before, that this big demon's probably going to get all his friends onto us and there will be an unceremonial circumstance on Oxford Street. But he told us, no, you should go out and pray to Krishna, and Krishna will protect you. So we had no choice, the temple president said, and we must do, because in those days that's how it was. Whatever the temple president said, you did do, and there was no question of not doing. So we went out that morning. I remember specifically I was in the back of the kirtan and, you know, watching in front, expecting the worst to happen. But interestingly enough, as we approached the fruit vendor, he was all bandaged up. He was really in a mess. Instead of being angry with us, he said, Hare Krishna. He was ushering us on down the road saying Hare Krishna. And I was thinking, wow, you know, all my love and peace did nothing for this guy. And the devotees practically, well, they beat him up severely and made him into a devotee. You know? So there was all my love and peace. That was all destroyed. That when it comes to the situation where another devotee is being harassed by a demon, that is when we can vent our anger and frustration. Yeah. And of course, within reason, this hitting with the cartels, I don't think it's something that we should do today, because there is other systems in place within society where you no doubt get sued for doing something like that. But that was what Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out, that if you still have anger within you, don't vent it out amongst yourself as Vaishnavas, but vent it out on the demons. That is bona fide. But as much as possible, keep the straw within the mouth and do as Nityananda did, remain humble. You know? But another incident when I first joined was that two devotees were fighting. And it was a very, very heavy fight. And I came to the temple president with my love and peace again. And I said, what is this? I came for love and peace, and this is what I get? And he said to me, don't worry. This is not just a temple, but it is a devotional hospital. So everyone that's come here, they're sick, but daily taking the medicine to relieve themselves from their sickness. And then he said to me, don't worry, something will happen to you too. And I was so puffed up and arrogant in those days, I was thinking to myself, well, what possibly could happen to me? 2 weeks later, I got this big boil that came up on my hand. I still have the scar. It's a 43-year-old scar there. It was a huge boil. And I came to the temple president again. I said, what's this? And he said, I told you so. I told you something would happen to you. And he said, don't worry, don't mind, your body is so contaminated from your previous life. Krishna has arranged that all the contamination is coming out in one place. Don't worry, just keep chanting Hare Krishna, Prabhu. So we had two verses at least I used to take shelter in regards to the senses and the mind, because this is the two main difficulties we have in the beginning of becoming a devotee. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So, I remember the higher taste in Berry Place was Balagopal's Sunday feast. Oh, they were something out of this world. I could mention the preparations if you like, but it is a Kadashi, and you may get upset with me, but here we go. Two sabjis made with ghee, kofta, puris that puffed up, pushpan rice with every single spice in there, with cheese balls, with coconut wedges, with a few raisins in there, with cashew nuts in there, and a little bit of sugar, and Hare Krishna. That in itself, Prabhupada said, is a feast. Then there was samosas or pakoras, and there was the sweets, halava, sweet rice, gulab jams, laddu, and shrikhand, and one cup of nectar. Yesterday I was out on the lawn and I was reminded of the Sunday feast we used to have in Berry Place, because I was watching one of your ducks walking. There was an ugly duckling out there. Prabhupada said that in the beginning of Krishna consciousness you should eat so much that you should walk away from the temple like a duck. Mm-hmm. And I remember doing that. That was the only thing in the beginning I was attracted, and that was the prasad. And it was something we relished fully every day, and it kept our senses under perfect control. And the mind. Yeah, Prabhupada's engagements, he engages us fully in preaching Sankirtan and book distribution. So this kept the mind single-minded in purpose. This is very, very important for us to be able to fully engage in loving devotional service on a day-to-day basis, that we're so absorbed that the mind does not deviate one moment, one second from Krishna. This is the objective of our everyday life as a devotee. If your mind is disturbed, then you can understand perhaps you're not engaged enough. Because if the mind's not engaged, then let's say that an idle mind is a devil's workshop, or the mind is just wandering around here, there, everywhere, uncontrolled. And therefore, you're unable to do anything.